Kamala Harris's path to being America's first black woman elected vice president is examined in a new biography, Kamala's Way. Not only has Harris broken the ceiling in being elected VP, she holds the pivotal casting vote and therefore a razor-thin majority for the Democrats in the Senate, giving them a narrow hold over both houses in Congress. This book on Vice President Harris has been written by Californian political journalist Dan Moraine, who's covered her political career for more than 20 years in his writing for the LA Times, the Sacramento Bee and Cal Matters. Kamala's Way tracks how the daughter of two immigrants from India and Jamaica rose through legal and political circles. Early in her working life, she was a prosecutor, handling child molestation cases and homicides for the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. As her career progressed, she became the District Attorney of San Francisco, and by 2010 she was elected Attorney General of California and re-elected 4 years later. From 2017 she served as a junior United States Senator, and last month, age 56, Kamala Harris was sworn in as Vice President of the United States. Journalist Dan Moran has had a ringside seat to her career trajectory. I asked him what the foundations of Kamala Harris's career are.
The foundations really go back to her parents, I think. You know, her mom has such an outsized influence on her, less so her father, which is a whole other story. But this is a woman who at age 19 had a passion to become a scientist, a researcher, grew up in India, went to college in India, graduated, and at age 19 persuaded her parents that she should be able to come to Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley, great university, back in 1959. So imagine that, halfway around the world. And so her mom really instilled this sense of, I don't know, mission and drive and social consciousness and justice in Kamala Harris and in her sister. So I think her mom, from everything I gather, Kamala Harris is really her mother's daughter.
Of course, it happened during the race for the Democratic nomination. She confronted Joe Biden about his record in the segregation era and desegregation era, and it was quite a tense moment between them. But what Kamala Harris had was a very personal story. She was in kindergarten being bused as part of Berkeley's desegregation program.
Yes, you're exactly right. So this was a huge issue in the states in the 1960s and 70s and on into the 80s, really. But Berkeley was different than many other cities. Berkeley is a more liberal place than many of the other cities where desegregation took place. Nonetheless, in 1970, which is when she was entering first grade, she was bused. She was bused. It was about 2.5 miles from her home in the flats of Berkeley up to the hills. And then the flats were where the poorer people lived, where people of color lived, and up in the hills. It's lovely up there. A lot of eucalyptus trees and oaks. That's where the white people lived and where their kids went to school. So it was a very early introduction to the concept of race for Kamala Harris.
She was also on protest marches from a young age as well. It was one of those childhoods that was politicized in a sense, not by the parents, but because of the parents.
Right. Yeah. Well, Berkeley was the center of so much that was changing in America in the 1960s and early 70s. And it was the focus of the anti-Vietnam War era. It was the center of civil rights movement, free speech movement, and so many things came together. And her parents, though not leaders in the movement, certainly were participants. All the while going to this great university, UC Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley, and getting their respective PhDs. So, highly accomplished huge intellects.
Her father also something of an outsider in an institutional sense as an economist. He was far from the mainstream in his specialty. You mentioned they have a much less significant relationship in a way with respect to her career. Her parents separated when she was young. But what kind of an influence do you believe the way he went about his academic career?
Well, you're correct. Their divorce was final in 1972, but they had shared custody. He got a tenured position in the economics department at Stanford University. So he was a professor of economics at a world-class university. And they had joint custody. So we know now that Vice President Harris and her family, including her father, her mother died in 2009, did not help me on this book. They did not talk with me. So much of what I know about them is what I've read and through my interviewing reporting. But Donald Harris, her father, made sure that Kamala Harris and her sister Maya, younger sister by 2 years, understood where he came from. And so he brought them to Jamaica. They met his elders there. They were little girls at the time. But they certainly understood that Jamaica in the 1700s, early 1800s, was a slave state, and their ancestors came from they worked on plantations, and it was a brutal slave economy in Jamaica up through the 1830s.
Was there she a descendant of people who owned slaves?
Well, yeah. So without DNA testing, you can't really be sure. Now, Donald Harris, Professor Harris, her father writes that an ancestor of his was this fellow Hamilton Brown. Interesting that there's a Alexander Hamilton, famous for the play Hamilton, perhaps you've seen. But also, this was a very different Hamilton. This guy was one of the leaders in the slave economy. And Donald Harris writes that they're descended from, obviously slavery entailed all sorts of coercion. Nobody exactly knows what happened, but it wouldn't be shocking if Hamilton Brown fathered children by his slaves, and they would have been slaves. They would have been born into slavery. So it's impossible to know without DNA testing. I have no knowledge beyond what Donald Harris has written. I do know that it was an awful slave economy in Jamaica.
This then is the political environment. He, of course, as an economist, was an outsider as well. One of his specialties was in the Marxist analysis of economics, and he had to fight for his own rights in his academic career, Dan.
That's right. Yeah, both parents had to overcome issues. You're right. He was very much an outsider. He was not part of the economic orthodoxy of the time in the 1970s. There was a petition that students generated that they thought that Marxist economics ought to be taught at Stanford in the 1970s. So after some no small battle, he ultimately did get tenured. But it was, maybe some of the old timers in the Stanford economics department might have preferred that he not achieve tenure. Now, her mother, to me, it's an interesting facet of her life that her mom was a research scientist at Berkeley, breast cancer researcher, and got passed over for a job, and rather than sort of take that, she got a job at McGill University in Montreal, so French-speaking country, city in a different country. And so she packed off her two daughters. And that's where Kamala Harris went to high school. And, you know, I think anybody who goes to high school, no matter where they go, it's a formative time. So that was certainly part of her upbringing. She didn't speak French. But there she was, and you know, moved a long way from Berkeley up to Montreal. She really is in that sense, quite a multicultured person. Dad from Jamaica, mom from India. Her mom brought her back to India, so she and her sister were well aware of her Indian roots as well. Her mom made sure, though, that her daughters were raised with the understanding that they would be viewed as Black in America, and so they became both quite steeped in the civil rights, in the history of civil rights in the U.S. Kamala Harris certainly is well versed in the civil rights here. She's got these different things going on. She's not in any sense a parochial person.
Can we talk about the political maneuverings of her career in the law? And of course, this is particular to the US system, with the district attorney system here, the very close relationship between politics and the practice of the law. When did we first see her political chops? Not just ambition, but the skills.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, from the start, it was clear. I did not cover her as a saint. She's her first run for office. She won. She ran for district attorney in San Francisco. So that's the main prosecutor. The job of a district attorney is to prosecute crimes, criminals, and she ran to the right of the incumbent district attorney. So she, in fact, the headline endorsing Kamala Harris in the newspaper in San Francisco, The Chronicle, was "For Law and Order, Kamala Harris." So she, although never a conservative and always a liberal, she certainly ran, she certainly won that first race by being a shade more conservative than the incumbent. Now, she opposed the death penalty, as you know. At the time, California had the death penalty; it still does, but it's really a zombie law. No, nobody's been executed since 2006, and nobody will anytime soon. Nonetheless, it was an issue then. So she opposed the death penalty then, and it came up very early in her tenure as district attorney, and nearly derailed her early on. There was a police officer who was murdered in San Francisco, and she chose not to seek the death penalty. And this outraged police and many politicians, and she was on the defensive for several months, but she stuck to her position. Didn't bring a death penalty case. The guy is serving life in prison without the possibility of parole, so it's not as if he was coddled in any sense, but not sent to death row.
Part of her politics, as you say, there was criticism of that era that she sort of stood on one banner headline, and then there was a shift when she became, when she took the role as Attorney General, and in towards more reform. What happened once she took her run for Senate in 2016? Because again, do we see more of where her politics is positioned, even as a Democrat at that time?
Yeah, so that's really a perceptive question, because when she was – so the job of a district attorney, and then she ran for attorney general and won the race for attorney general, their job really is to enforce the law as it is. So whether they agree with the law or not, and there are many laws that I'm sure she would have changed had she had the vote. Nonetheless, as district attorney and attorney general, she had to enforce the law. When she got to the U.S. Senate, actually on the very night she won, so she won her Senate seat on the night Donald Trump won the presidency. She on that night, they had written an optimistic speech expecting Hillary Clinton, as we all did, was going to win in 2016, and that she would be part of the majority. in D.C. Well, Trump won, and they had to, of course, tear up that, you know, optimistic speech. And what she delivered that night was this real call to arms about how she was going to fight on every level, fight on behalf of Black Lives Matter, fight on behalf of immigrants, fight on behalf of undocumented immigrants. And that's what she did when she got to the Senate. She no longer was responsible for enforcing the law as it existed. As a U.S. senator, she could take positions, and she did, and quite forcefully in many instances. Not that she got any laws particularly changed. I mean, the Democrats were in a minority with President Trump, so Democrats didn't get much done. Nonetheless, she made clear that she had her own opinions, and they were pretty liberal. She accumulated one of the most liberal voting records of any member in the U.S. Senate during her 2 years there.
Let's talk about how far she has come, how fast. So, becomes a senator in 2016 and is now the Vice President of the United States. She's a very hard worker. That is evident from your book and from her law career. She worked harder and longer than others. What else have you observed, having observed her from her time in California, now do you recognise in Washington as being the characteristics that have moved her so far, so fast?
Yeah, you know, she was always a really good politician, terrific retail politician, very good at giving a speech. You know, the instances where I saw her in a more closed setting, you know, she lights up her room. Well, she does that on the national stage too. I mean, you see her doing, you know, really, really sort of routine things like swearing in new cabinet members in the Biden-Harris administration, and you can just tell she's you know, sort of bursting with energy. She's this very engaging. Not to say that. She is in some sense a work in progress. We don't know what her views on certain major issues are. We'll find that out. I mean, we know though that it's really not the job of the vice president to set policy. That's the president's job. She's the vice president. Nonetheless, you can just see that this is a woman who is going to be on the stage for 4 years and probably beyond. I mean, without a doubt, she's going to run for the presidency when Joe Biden is done in 4 or 8 years. So she's going to be on the scene, and you'll see that she is, she will make missteps. She will overreach sometimes, but she's really very good at what she does.
That ability to charm, we have seen it in previous presidents, Bill Clinton most notably, Barack Obama would be another. It gets you so far in the shark pit or the shark pool that is Washington politics. What did you see even back during her California career was an ability to see when to go for something and when not to, who to align yourself with and who not to?
Yeah, well, so she was strategic in the fights she chose. She did not fight every battle. She made a point of avoiding certain fights where she, you know, if she didn't have to, she just didn't engage. She, on the other hand, there were issues that really mattered to her. Human trafficking was one, particularly crimes against children. Now, you know, everybody's appalled by crimes against children. She was in a position, however, to do something about it, and she did, and really made it an issue that went beyond California, really became national in her prosecution of this particular website called Backpage.com, which was essentially, as she characterized it, an online bordello. That would be one thing if it's adult, but many instances there were minors being trafficked on this website. And she went after him, stretched the bounds of the law. And so far, the case is still pending. The defendants have all pleaded not guilty, but you know, she moved when other states did not, and when the federal government, federal Justice Department, did not move. She forced the issue, and now this the site is shut down, and the feds since have brought criminal charges. That case is pending. There's also a case pending in California that she brought as Attorney General.
Has she long signaled her ambitions for the top job?
Well, you know, I got to know her a little bit in 2007 and 2008. I was part of the team at the LA Times, Los Angeles Times, that covered the presidential race. And she was Barack Obama's chief surrogate, certainly in Northern California, which is where I'm based. I think she was the first elected official to endorse Obama. And then she helped him throughout that campaign. I saw her in Iowa that year, trudging through the miserable cold snow at the Iowa caucuses. She was knocking on doors for Obama. This was when she was a district attorney. So, you know, clearly she was thinking about this. You can go all the way back to 1992 when she was a deputy district attorney, a young lawyer in Oakland. And on election night 1992, she got into her beat-up old Toyota Corolla and drove across the San Francisco Bay Bridge to the victory party for the two Democratic women who won U.S. Senate seats that night. That was the night Bill Clinton was elected. So she'd been thinking about politics, I think, for a long time. Clearly, when she ran for Attorney General in California in 2010, it was apparent that that was not going to be her last stop. And it really didn't matter what I thought. What really drove the point home was that the Republican Party nationally got engaged in that race to try to stop her before she rose. And I was told back then that the reason was they viewed her as a rising star, and that if she won the race for Attorney General, she could become governor or senator or, you know, vice president. So
how will she temper this career? Not only the ambition, she can probably manage that strategically, but as you say, what she did as a lawyer and the inclination to go after things, or indeed the inclination to speak her mind, as she did during the recent presidential debates and as she did with Joe Biden in the race for the nomination. Is she going to be able to cope with being in the background for the Biden presidency, and to what extent would she tolerate that?
Well, you know, that's a really interesting question. You know, Joe Biden would not have selected Kamala Harris if he wanted somebody to say yes, sir. you don't pick Kamala Harris to be your running mate to then shove her off in a corner like some potted plant. I mean, she's a forceful person. She's a person to be reckoned with. She's smart. She's strategic. So she will be a force. Now, I don't think that we're going to see disagreements between President Biden and Vice President Harris in public. If she has something to say to President Biden, if she disagrees with him, she'll do that behind closed doors. She's, you know, a very savvy politician. She understands he's the boss, she's not. She also understands that her future depends on his success. So, you know, it's like her job to make him the best president he can possibly be. And part of that means being the best vice president she can be. She's his wing person. She has to watch out for him and help him in every way she can. And that will help her. And I think she sees that. I mean, I just would be shocked if she doesn't, because she is she does understand politics. She's very good at it.
Dan Morane, and his book about Kamala Harris is called Kamala's Way.